So thanks for the introduction, and of course, thanks for having me here. So for a week, it was very nice. This is really an impressive place. Today, the topic of my talk is entanglement spreading after a global quench in integrable models. So this is a work that I've been doing with in collaboration with Pasquale Calabrese in Trieste. And if you want to know many more details, you can look at the paper that appeared recently, OK? So the outline of my talk is as follows. So the main goal of this talk is to convince you that in integrable models, it's possible to describe analytically the entanglement dynamics after a global quantum quench. So to this purpose here, in this talk, I will employ two techniques. So I will combine two techniques. One is the semi-classical picture of, for the entanglement dynamics. So this is a semi-classical picture that has been invented in 2005 by Pasquale and John Cardi. And it allows you to describe qualitative features of the entanglement dynamics as a consequence of the propagation in the system after the quench of free quasi-particles, OK? So I will combine this picture with the well-known Bethe-Ansatz techniques for solving quantum quenches in integrable models, OK? And the combination of the two ingredients will give a sort of complete, if you want, semi-classical description for the entanglement dynamics after a global quantum quench. So in the remaining part of the talk, then I will basically provide a benchmark of this new result in the anisotropic spin 1 alpha Heisenberg chain. And at the end, if I have time, I hope I have some time, I will discuss some recent developments. So in particular, I would like to mention that within the same formalism, it's possible to treat the Reni diagonal entropies. And also, it's possible to discuss the entanglement dynamics, to address the entanglement dynamics after inhomogeneous quantum quenches. Okay? OK, so this is a talk about entanglement. I need to introduce a few concepts, at least the definition of entanglement. So let us consider a quantum system in the dimensions. Let's say that the system is in a pure state psi. Of course, from the pure state, I can define the density matrix, the full system density matrix, as a psi, okay, rho. And in order to introduce entanglement, usually one needs to define a sort of bipartition or multipartition of the system. Here I will focus on a special bipartition. So I will consider that my system is divided into two parts, A and the rest, that I call B. And from the density matrix, I can trace the degrees of freedom of the B part. And I can define the reduced density matrix for the A part, rho A, OK? So entanglement measures how much quantum correlation, pure quantum correlation, is shared between the two subsystems, A and B. So, and there are very well known quantities for measuring these quantum correlations. And perhaps the two most well known are the von Neumann entropy, which is defined as minus trace of rho A log rho A, and the Reni entropies, which are defined in terms of the moments of the reduced density matrix rho A. Okay? In this talk, I want to discuss what happens to these two quantities when I take a system and I drive the system out of equilibrium. OK, so to be precise, let me introduce the basic protocol that I will use to drive the system out of equilibrium. And this is the quantum quench protocol. Okay? This is perhaps the simplest way of driving a system out of equilibrium. So in the quantum quench protocol, I take an initial state, psi. And I have a many-body Hamiltonian H. So psi is not an eigenstate of H. And so I can study the non-trivial unitary dynamics that is generated under this Hamiltonian from starting from this initial state. Okay? OK, of course, for any system, in principle, I can expand the initial state in the eigenstates of the post-quench Hamiltonian. And I can get the wave function at any time, exactly. And once I have the wave function, I can ask questions about expectation values of generic operators, O. And this a generic expectation value is given in terms of this double sum here, OK? Now, this expression is nice, but it's horrible, OK? Because I have a double sum, and each the number of terms in each sum is exponentially growing with the system size. So it's horrible. So the relevant question, one relevant question that I can ask is what happens in the long time limit, OK? So in the long time limit, under very mild assumptions, for instance, that these observables are local, I can simplify this sum by forgetting about the off-diagonal terms, okay? So the terms for which E alpha is different from E beta. If I do so, I get that the time-dependent expectation value of local observable in the thermodynamic limit and in the limit of infinite time become actually time-independent, so become stationary. And is described by the so-called diagonal ensemble, which is defined here, and is basically constructed starting from the overlaps between the initial state and the eigenstates of the post-quenching Hamiltonian, okay? Okay, so this gives the full answer. So if I want to, the steady state expectation value of a generic observable, I have to construct this diagonal ensemble. Now this is technically very nice, still there is too much information in this ensemble, okay? Because there is an exponentially large number of parameters which are the overlaps between the initial state and the steady state, and sorry, and the eigenstates of the post-quenching Hamiltonian. Now the relevant question here is, if we can simplify this description, I mean, if we can describe the steady state in terms of fewer parameters, okay? This is possible for generic, for generic, I mean, non-integrable many-body systems. And the point is that if you perform a quench in a generic system, in a non-integrable system, and you go to the steady state and you focus to local quantities, you can actually say that the locally, the density matrix that describes the steady state is actually the Gibbs density matrix, okay? Meaning that the system locally reaches thermal equilibrium. Hmm? So the Gibbs density matrix contains only one parameter, which is the temperature, or if you want, the associated energy density, okay? So for non-integrable models, the answer, if you want, is easy. So there is a simple description of the steady state in terms of the Gibbs ensemble. But however, this is not the full story, because in one dimension, for instance, there are integrable models. So integrable models are models where you have an extensive number of local or quasi-local conserved quantities besides the Hamiltonian. So these quantities that I call I commute with the Hamiltonian, commute among themselves, okay? If you perform a quench in one-dimensional systems which are integrable, then the steady state fails to thermalize, okay? It's not described by the Gibbs ensemble. Still, a simplified description is possible in terms of a so-called generalized Gibbs ensemble, okay? The idea of this generalized Gibbs ensemble is that you have to complement the Gibbs by adding all these extra local or quasi-local conserved quantities with the associated Lagrange multipliers, okay, beta j. Now this, this idea started in 2008 by Rigol, and it generated really a lot of theoretical work. There was a big debate whether or not, as to whether this was the description with the GG was correct or not. Now this debate is settled, so it turns out that the GG is, describes all the local or quasi-local properties of the steady state. And in this talk, I'm going to assume that the GG description of the steady state is the correct one, okay? And now, the main question that I want to address is if using this technology available for integrable models, is possible to describe analytically the post-quench behavior of the entanglement entropy? Hmm? This is the main question of the talk. Okay, this question might seem a bit academic, but this is actually not the case, because in recent years, it became possible actually to measure the entanglement dynamics in cold atomic gases. So for instance, in this very nice work in the group of Markus Greiner in Harvard, they considered the Bose-Abbott model, which is basically the one of the best models to describe cold atomic gases, and they performed a quench in the Bose-Abbott model. Hmm? And they were able to measure the Reni entropies, one of the Reni entropies, actually this S2, okay? So in these figures, you see these dots, which are experimental data for S2, and these continuous lines are exact results. I guess here, since the systems are very small, this is actually exact normalization. So this is very nice, but there is a caveat. So the caveat is that you see the system sizes that they could address were actually quite small, okay? This is a system of six sites, and the entropy is calculated for a subsystem of two sites, okay? So system sizes are ridiculously small, but still this is very promising and encouraging for the future, I would say. Still, even though these system sizes are extremely small, in this data, you see already some qualitative features that actually are generic. So for instance, at shock times, you see that the entanglement entropy, sorry, the Renyi entropy in this case, it grows linearly. And then at long times, it saturates, OK? This is expected. And this is actually can be described by a well-known semi-classical picture, OK? So this semi-classical picture, which goes back to Calabrese and Cardi 2005, basically tells you the following. So when I perform a quench, I pump into the system an extensive amount of energy. Okay? This energy has to go somewhere. So what the system does, it creates pairs of quasi-particles uniformly, okay, in the initial state. Hmm? The assumption of this quasi-particle picture is that if you have only quasi-particles which are created at the same point in space are entangled, okay, with each other. But if you have two quasi-particles that are created far apart, then you don't carry any mutual entanglement. Okay? Now, if you want now to calculate the value of the von Neumann entropy at the generic time t, you have basically to count the number of particles that were created at the same point in space. And at a generic time t, they are shared between your subsystem A and the rest. Okay? So the problem of calculating the dynamics of the entanglement entropy is then a kinematic problem of counting these particles. Okay? If you do the calculation, you end up with this formula. So this formula has two terms. Okay? One term is this, which is proportional to time. And it describes a linear increase at shock times. Okay? Then when this condition here is violated, basically the entanglement is saturated. The saturation value is described by this term here. Okay? This term tells you that at long times, the entanglement stops growing and is proportional to the size of your subsystem. Okay? This is the volume law for the entanglement entropy. OK, this formula is extremely nice. It gives you a qualitative feature of the entanglement dynamics. However, you would like to apply this formula to a realistic model, okay? An actual microscopic model. If you want to do that, you have to determine these two parameters here, okay? There is this function f, and there are this velocity v. So this function f is basically the probability of creating quasi-particles in the initial state. Hmm? And this v are the velocities of these quasi-particles that you create, okay? So these are the two ingredients that one needs. So the program of calculating these two ingredients so far has been carried out only in systems that are mappable to free ferments. Okay? So in this paper in 2008, Pasquale and Maurizio Fagotti considered the generic quench in the XY chain. Okay? The XY chain is a model that is mappable to free ferments. So they consider a generic global quench. And after a lot of work, they were able to provide the analytical result for the entanglement dynamics. Okay? So I should say that this model is mappable to free fermions, but calculating the entropy is really a non-trivial task. Okay? If you read the paper, it's really a lot of work. The important message is that, however, in the long time limit, so for t going to infinity and for large subsystem sizes, L going to infinity with t by L fixed, which we call a scaling limit. So in this scaling limit, you get this result here, okay? This result has the same structure as the formula that I showed you in the previous slide, okay? It's the same as the same structure as the Calabrese-Cardi semi-classical formula. Hmm? However, here you have an actual prediction for the function f and for the velocities of the entangling quasi-particles. Hmm? So what I want to do in this talk is to show that calculating this function f and this velocity is also possible in models that are interacting, okay? Integrable models, but with the presence of interactions.
Is capital H function something we should know?
Or? It's a known function. It's a simple function, actually. It's a, yeah. I don't remember by heart. I think it's a simple function. Okay. So. Okay, here, to be precise, I will consider the spin 1 alpha anisotropic Heisenberg chain, which is the so-called XXZ chain. The XZ chain is defined by this Hamiltonian. I will restrict myself just for convenience. This is not an important restriction to delta. Delta is this parameter here, larger than 1. And I will consider quenches with the several, starting from several initial states. Namely, I will take as initial state the nail state, okay, the nail antiferromagnet. I will also consider a tilted version of the nail state in which I take the nail and then I rotate along some direction. I will also consider the Majumdar-Ghosh state, which is the state in which spins on nearest neighbor sides form singlets. And I will also consider the tilted ferromagnet, okay, which is the ferromagnet rotated along some direction. Okay. Okay. So this is the model. Before introducing you to the results, I should say at least something about the integrability of this model and the fact that it's solvable by the answers. So I will really be brief, and I just introduce the concepts that I need for the following. Okay. So the only thing you need to know about the Betti-Ansel solution of the XXZ chain is that all the eigenstates of the chain are in correspondence with the solutions of a set of nonlinear algebraic equations, which are called Bethe-Godin-Takayashi equations. Okay? These equations are equations for these parameters here, lambda. Okay? This lambda play the same role that is played by the quasi-particle momentum in free models. Okay? You can interpret this quasi-momentum of these free particles that you have in the system. Okay. Now, to solve these equations, you have to provide these numbers here. These are called beta quantum numbers. So in order to construct an eigenstate, you have to provide these numbers, solve for these rapidity lambdas. And then from this, you can basically, after some work, construct expectation values and whatever you want to know about eigenstates. Okay? But there is a one-to-one correspondence. So for each set of this J, you get a unique set of lambdas, and this identified a given eigenstate of the model. Okay?
So what are the J's?
The J's are integer or half-integer numbers.
Where do you get them?
Basically, you know that they are bounded. So there is a bound. And then you have to play and construct all possible J's. And this has been done in the last century, I would say. And now it's well known which set of numbers you have to choose if you want to target a particular eigenstate. Okay,
so it's the J is related somehow to the filling of how many particles do we have?
Yeah, actually you can, so in the space of these quantum numbers, this is really like a free fermion model. So you construct the eigenstates by filling the allowed value of these quantum numbers. And then you can look at these equations as a mapping from this effective free fermion model to the actual model, where you have quasi-momenta. Okay. Now, in this talk, I want to consider the thermodynamic limit. Okay. In the thermodynamic limit, these solutions become dense on the real axis. So it's convenient to work, instead of considering the lambdas, you work with their densities. Okay. So you work with the particle density. The particle density is basically the density of occupied rapidities or quasi-momenta. So there is also a Hall density, which is the density of unoccupied rapidities. And then you can define the total density as the sum of the two. Hmm? This is exactly the same as you would have for a free model. Okay? You have Hall density, particle density, and total density. Now, an important observation is that each set of densities correspond to an exponentially large number of eigenstates of the microscopic model, okay? So the number of eigenstates the total number of eigenstates that in the thermodynamic limit give the same set of densities is counted by what is called the Young-Young entropy, which is just the thermodynamic entropy in the context of integrable models, okay? And the Young-Young entropy is expressed in terms of the densities by this formula here, okay? There is a well-known expression of the Young-Young entropy in terms of these densities, rho particle and rho. Okay.
Is it still true that you have only one eigenstate per one value of lambda?
What do you mean?
Before you said there's a direct mapping between the lambdas and the eigenstates.
So each eigenstate corresponds to a different set of lambdas. Yeah, that's true.
A full set, each eigenstate corresponds to.
So these equations, this equation is not an equation for a single lambda, okay? You solve this equation for a certain number of, it's a system of equations, okay? The system of equations give a set of lambda 1, lambda 2, and so lambda n. So this set of lambdas identifies a given eigenstate of the chain, okay? Okay, So this is the Bethe-Ansel solution, so just a few concepts. Now I should tell you how to solve the quench problem for integrable models, okay? I will be very brief. So the idea is actually quite simple. So the idea is to go back to the diagonal ensemble, okay, which is given by this expression here. So in the diagonal ensemble, I can take the thermodynamic limit, okay? In the thermodynamic limit, instead of summing over eigenstates, I sum over these root densities that I introduced in the previous slide. Okay, this is, if you want, it's not a sum, it's a functional integral, but okay, we don't care. Then a simple thing that I can do, I can take this overlap and I can exponentiate, okay, taking the log. And in doing so, I define this epsilon, which is called the driving term, okay? Then I have to remember that for each set of densities, I have an exponentially large number of eigenstates, which is given by the Yang-Yang entropy, okay? Then I go from this expression here to this expression here, okay, in the thermodynamic limit. Now, the key observation is that in the thermodynamic limit, this Yang-Yang entropy is extensive, is proportional to L, and also this driving term is extensive, okay? This immediately tells you that in the thermodynamic limit, I can treat this functional integral using the saddle point, okay? Saddle point means that I have to minimize this functional here, as this functional of rho, okay? So the minimization process gives me a special value of this rho, which I call rho star, okay? All the local properties of the steady state are encoded in this special set of densities, rho star. Okay. Just to give you the flavor of how these root densities look like, so these are, for instance, these are the results for the quench from the nail state in the XXZ chain at delta equal 1. So these are the root densities that you get by doing the minimizing the quench action functional. Okay? In the end, they are quite simple functions. Okay? So it's also important to stress that these root densities correspond again to an exponentially large number of microscopic eigenstates, and their number is counted by the Yang-Yang entropy calculated over these root densities. Okay? Okay, so these are the two ingredients that I needed to introduce. Now I can talk about the results. So the first thing that I want to focus on is the steady state value of the entanglement entropy. Okay, so I perform a quench, then I go to the steady state, and I ask what is the steady state value of the entanglement entropy. So the key observation for deriving this is that if I focus on local properties, the reduced density matrix that describe the steady state is the GG density matrix, okay? Then this implies that the von Neumann entropy has to be equal to the thermodynamic entropy of this GG. But the thermodynamic entropy of the GG is nothing more than the Yang-Yang entropy of the steady state, okay? Which I know from the previous slide. So the first prediction is that in the semi-classical formula for the entanglement dynamics, the term that describes the saturating value of the entanglement entropy is just the Yang-Yang entropy of the steady state. So one parameter of the semi-classical formula is fixed. Now I need to determine the entangling quasi-particles and their velocities. This is really much more tricky. So the observation, however, is the following. In the thermodynamic limit, if I consider the expectation value of local observables, there is a well-known result due to Cohen and Essler in 2013. And these results basically tell you that the expectation value of local and quasi-local observables can be written only in terms of this steady state. Okay, this is another name for the rho star that I introduced in the previous slide. And then only is given by this steady state and by the low-lying excitations around the steady state. Okay, you take the steady state and construct the low-lying excitations, and this is enough to reconstruct the dynamics of local or quasi-local observables. Here, in this talk, I'm going to assume that the same is true for the entanglement dynamics, okay? So I assume that the entangling quasi-particles are the low-lying excitations around the steady state at infinite time, okay?
When you say low-lying, you mean in both directions, or?
Yeah, because, yes, the steady state is described by a state which is in the middle of the spectrum, so you can create excitations above or below, so it's, yeah. Okay, so This slide, you can actually ignore it. The goal is to tell you that it's possible to construct analytically these low-lying excitations, and then once you have them, you can construct their dispersion and calculate their group velocities, which are the main ingredients that I need in the semi-classical form. Okay, it's just to tell you that, so it's just you can actually ignore it. Okay, this perhaps is it's important to. So here it's important to summarize. So the theoretical program to construct the entanglement dynamics is the following. So you start at t equals 0, you have your initial state. You go directly at t equals infinity when the system reaches a steady state. The steady state is represented by a set of root densities, rho star. Okay? From these root densities, I can construct the low-lying excitations, deriving the group velocities. And then if you want, I can go back in time, feed these ingredients into the semi-classical formula of Pasquale, and then I can reconstruct the dynamics of the entanglement in the scaling limit. Okay? And the result that I get is this formula here, okay? Okay, now we have the full prediction. The goal is to show that this is actually working. So the first thing that I want to check is the steady state value of the entanglement entropy, okay? Here, to be specific, I take again the XXZ chain. I consider the quench from the nail state, okay? And this here in this figure, I show DMRG results, okay? These results are for delta equal 2 and a chain of 40 sites. This is the von Neumann entropy plotted as a function of time. And these different curves correspond to different sizes of the subsystem. You see there is, again, a linear increase in saturation. Now I take the saturation values here, and I plot them against the subsystem size L. Okay? If I do so, I get this, this data here, this symbol. The different symbols correspond to different deltas. Okay? Now, these lines are fits, but the slope of these lines are fixed by the theoretical result, okay? This result here. And you see basically that the agreement is quite good. Already for small subsystem sizes of the order of 10, you see the right volume law, okay? Sure.
So wait, they're entirely fixed by that term, or the fit is fixed, by the form of the fit function is fixed?
So the fit is a linear fit, so you have the slope of the linear growth, mm-hmm. and then a constant.
Right.
The constant is fitted, but the slope is fixed by this formula here. So it's a one-parameter fit. It's a linear fit where you fix the coefficient of the increase. Okay. This is just preliminary. Okay, just a zeroth order check. Now another preliminary check is the following. So here I consider the full time dynamics, the same quench. So these different lines are the entanglement entropies, actually their density. So I divide the entropy by the size of the subsystem. And I plot against the rescale time. So I take T, the time after the quench, divided by L, the size of the block. For convenience, I also multiply for the maximum velocity, which I know from the analytical result, just to have this point here where the linear increase stops at 1, okay, just for convenience. Now, okay, you see that for finite subsystems and for finite times, there are very big scaling corrections, okay? This line here is the theoretical result, okay, this dash dot line, okay? However, I can extrapolate these results, and you see this symbol here are the extrapolated values and are somehow in agreement, I would say, with the theoretical result, okay?
Sorry, what are they extrapolated from?
So this is, you see, this data correspond to different block sizes. Yeah. And this is an extrapolation to the thermodynamic limit, so L going to infinity. So of course, here there is a question how you do the extrapolation. When you perform a quench, typically you pump a finite amount of energy into the system. So you are very far from the ground state, which means that in the fit, you don't expect non-trivial exponents. So basically, this is a fit with 1 over L and 1 over L squared. So it's just 1 over volume square fit. Because you are far from any critical behavior, so you don't expect non-trivial exponents, OK? Non-trivial corrections.
So the conjecture is also using the form of the quasi-particles that was found in the steady state.
So
you're assuming somehow that those quasi-particles were created at the initial time equals 0.
This is a good point. So the quasi-particles that I'm using Actually, I've created that T equal infinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't this confirming that?
This is a check that works.
That's a check. That this
yeah. So the physics, the physical explanation is that when you have an integrable model, you have if you have quasi-particles, they have infinite lifetime. So I mean, the description with the quasi-particles that are there at T equal infinity, I mean, these quasi-particles have an infinite long time. So you can reconstruct the dynamics up to very short times. Yeah. So this is the physical picture. Because the model is integrable. Yeah. Okay. So these are two checks. Now, I think the most important check is the following. So here, again, I consider the quench in the XXZ chain. Now I use ITBD. So I'm in the thermodynamic limit, okay? And I focus on the slope of the linear growth at short times, okay? So the entanglement at short times grow linearly, and here I plot the slope of this linear increase as a function of time. And this data, these plots are for different quenches, all the quenches that I can treat. So this is the quench from the dimer state for two different values of delta. Here is the quench from the tilted ferromagnet for several values of delta. And here is the quench from the nail state for several values of delta and tilting angle, okay? So you see, I don't have any more finite size corrections because ITBD works in the thermodynamic limit. Still, I have a finite time corrections because this slope has a non-trivial dynamics at short times. However, at times of the order of 10, I mean, you see that there is a stationary behavior arising. And this stationary behavior is perfectly described by these horizontal lines, which are the theoretical predictions from the improved semi-classical form, okay? This result here. And I would say this is, I mean, this is really good check. So it's really, I'm really impressed by this check. Okay, so this concludes the main part of the talk. Now, in the remaining time, I want just to mention two other results. So one result that I want to show you is that within the same formalism, it's possible to treat the Reni diagonal entropies, okay? These are have been introduced by Polkovnikov in 2008, and they were introduced as alternative measures of entropy in out-of-equilibrium systems, okay? They are easily defined in terms of the overlaps between the initial state and the eigenstates of the post-quench Hamiltonian. Okay. As I told you, this can be derived analytically, and these, for instance, are analytical results for the the density of entropy as a function of delta in the XXZ chain for a quench starting from the nail state. Okay? These curves here are analytical results. So why am I interested in these quantities? The reason is that there was a conjecture that the Reni diagonal entropy are actually half of the Reni entanglement entropies, okay, out of equilibrium. This conjecture has been explored in a lot of papers, but only for free models. Actually, recently, in this paper with Pasquale, we managed to prove this conjecture for a large class of quenches in integrable models, okay? And here is a numerical check that this works, okay? So here I show the second Reni entanglement entropy as a function of block size, okay, in the steady state, for a quench in the XXZ, the quench from the nail state, and several values of delta. So these symbols here are DMRG data, and these lines are, again, analytical results using this conjecture and the analytical results for the Reni diagonal entropies, okay? And you see that, I mean, the agreement is, I would say, is fairly good. Finally, I want to mention that here I want just to mention that it's possible to treat also inhomogeneous quenches. So inhomogeneous quenches are basically quenches where the initial state is obtained by joining together two macroscopically different states, okay? This is the setup that has been discussed by Benjamin a few days ago. So what I want to tell you is that it's possible to extend this quasi-particle picture for inhomogeneous quenches and derive analytical results for the entanglement dynamics, okay? So with this, I think I want just to summarize. So I've shown you that it's possible to provide analytical results for the entanglement dynamics after generic global quenches in integrable models. And the main result has been obtained by combining the semi-classical picture for the entanglement dynamics with the well-known technology based on integrability, okay? That allows to treat quantum quenches. So an intriguing idea that I find very interesting is that the entanglement dynamics seem to be encoded entirely in the steady state and in the low-lying excitations around this steady state. Okay? And in the end, I just briefly mentioned some possible interesting developments. Okay? So with this, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Questions?
Yep.
Very nice. Thanks for that. I have a question about the, I can imagine that this method only works when your initial state, in terms of the eigenstates of your time evolution Hamiltonian, is kind of in a narrow energy window. Because if it would be spread much more over many more eigenstates, you can no longer, you know, express all the far states.
Yeah.
So did you see that? Did you see that the Nail state and such are narrow in energy window?
Yeah. I mean, your observation is very important because it goes really at the core of this method. So one, there is actually another thing that I should say. Okay, all these results are possible because for these initial states, you can actually calculate analytically the overlaps with all the eigenstates of the post-quench Hamiltonian. These calculations are possible only for a small class of initial states. And actually, it's not clear, and it's very interesting to understand better for which class of initial state you can actually perform these analytical calculations. The second thing is more general. So your observation is that, of course, so if you imagine, I think I can translate what you said in, as follows. So you have, in order for this machinery to work, if you compute the overlaps between the initial state and the eigenstates of the post-quench Hamiltonian, I mean, they have to be picked in the thermodynamic limit around a specific value. That's, of course, true. Yeah, it has to be true. And for this case, it's true. But of course, the overlaps are very weird objects. You could introduce some initial state for which this condition is violated, and then the whole machinery would not be even defined.
Can I do a quick follow-up?
Yeah, okay.
So how would you expect that for inhomogeneous quenches, where you would have one side which is at a relatively different energy density than at the other side? In that case, I would expect sort of a bimodal distribution in the overlaps. Right?
No, I think the problem is that what is relevant in that problem is the overlap of the two leads. Okay, so you have one lead, which is one state. You have the other lead, which is the other state. And then you join them together. What is important is the overlap between the two leads and the eigenstates. Okay, then I mean there you have basically a current. So there is it's not the same steady state. The steady state that carries a current, and it has a non-trivial consequence that you have a local equilibrium in space-time. So at each value of x by t fixed, you have a local equilibrium. But yeah, it's a bit different from this situation. Of course, I think there you also need this condition that at least the overlaps of the two leads with the eigenstates have to have some nice properties. Otherwise, yeah, it cannot work. I think.
So concerning, in fact, the first question,
mm-hmm.
I mean, would that be related to the clustering of the initial state, clustering property of the initial state? Because if initial state is clustering, it has some fine energy density,
mm-hmm.
then it's basically described like locally terrible
mm-hmm.
or locally GGs.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a condition that would
require. So it's actually, it might be actually more complicated because, so first of all, the initial states for which this procedure works are always product states, I mean, very simple states.
So this is really clustering.
Yes, but I don't think that this is the whole story because another thing that is important is that, so this is a bit technical, but another thing that seems to be important is that if you consider the overlaps, only a certain class of eigenstates have non-zero overlap with these initial states.
Mm-hmm.
And these eigenstates have the peculiar properties that these rapidities are paired. So the rapidities appear in pairs of opposite sign. This also seems to be important, but the full answer actually is not.
But it's important for the exact calculation or for the method to have a chance to work?
I think it's more important for the exact calculation, because this method, I think, would work even in non-integrable models.
Yeah.
I think it should be defined even. Actually, it's a very interesting question to try to implement it numerically for generic non-integrable models. Of course, it relies on the fact that the logarithm of the overlap is an extensive object, which might be not true for a generic initial state.
Yes, exactly. So that might be reduced.
But provided that, I think this method should work for any type of model.
Regarding your diagonal Reni proof,
mm-hmm.
that there must be conditions on the quenches that that's valid for, right?
Yeah, it's this condition I was mentioning. It's the condition that the rapidities that define the eigenstates are paired. Okay. So it's. In fact, I don't expect to be generic. There might be initial states for which this ratio is different. It's not 1/2, but might be a different number. Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, let's thank the chancellor again.